Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Steve and Justin continue to work to put together a library of info sheets and webinars, too. Easy to read, straight to the point, plain talk. You can have instant access to all of it right now. Just sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider. There's never any charge. You just go to InvestTalk.com and scroll down the page until you see Sign Up for Free to become an InvestTalk Insider. And now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, February 29th. Edition of Invest Talk, and this is our 1 hour open forum for you. It is open, so please feel welcome to give us a call. Any money topic is welcome. You know, you can talk about how to save it, how to grow it, how to spend it right. We're not just stuck on stocks and bonds and mutual funds. We're here to help you take full charge of your financial life, and the goal being financial independence. That's really what retirement is. It's being financially independent and not having to work. And you might still want to, but not having to work. And that's really the goal that we're trying to help you get to. And now our listener line is open at 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. You can call it anytime, and you can also send a note directly to me. You can click on the Contact Justin button, or if you want to contact Steve, the Contact Steve button on investtalk.com. Go straight to our new inbox, and we will answer your questions. We pretty much answer every single one that comes in. So what money topic do you want to talk about? We welcome your questions. Whatever it is, I welcome your conversation. Tell us about your retirement portfolios, your goals. I like talking about goals. You know, some people call in about particular investments or an asset class, something like that. I like talking about goals. And goals can be complicated because everyone's current situation is different than one another's, and everyone's goals are a little bit different. So that path is not the easiest to find for an average person. And even for us, we help our clients find those goals or find that path. But you know, it takes an in-depth process. It takes time. So that's what we are at least trying to, on this show, trying to help you get to, is figure out that right path. All right, now maybe you want to talk about real estate. There are so many aspects of that topic, both as a homeowner and maybe as an investor. And Steve spoke with a listener who had a question about REITs on Friday, Real Estate Investment Trust. And there's a way to invest in real estate without actually buying and selling a real property. So maybe that needs some more attention. Maybe you want to talk about that. Or you do want to invest in a real property. And we certainly help clients with that as well. Now, real estate investment trust can add extra income to your portfolio. One of the best tax benefits of REITs compared to corporate stocks is that they're not subject to double taxation. Meaning, double taxation occurs when a company first pays an income tax on its earnings. You know, a company like Apple, they pay taxes on their earnings. And then the shareholder has to pay tax on the distribution of dividends. So it's double taxation, right? Because you get a dividend from Apple, that's a long-term capital gain tax, and tax at 15, 20%. Now REITs must distribute 90% of their earnings to shareholders. As a result, they do not have to pay corporate income tax, tax-free. Therefore, they generally pay a higher than average dividend because they don't have that tax bite. So that may seem very attractive, but it's important to understand how to value a REIT. It's a little bit different than a stock. Can be very volatile depending on what sector that REIT is in. Okay, so understand all of these interest rates as well affects REITs. Now, often investors value companies based on their net income. That's what earnings per share is, net income. That's not the case for REITs. Net income subtracts depreciation, which is justified when talking about a property, plant, or equipment, because you're using that equipment, right? And it's going to wear out over time. Well, REITs have properties that rarely depreciate. A lot of times, they appreciate. Therefore, we must add this line item back in. It's adjusting for the type of business that it is. And after doing this, we come up with what is called the funds from operation, FFO. So just like we can compare P multiples for companies, we can do the same for REITs by using price to FFO. Instead of price to earnings, price to FFO. Now, when making these comparisons, it's important to be comparing apples to apples, you know, industry to industry. There are REITs that invest in apartments. There are other REITs that invest in commercial properties, retail properties. There are REITs that invest in senior living facilities. So make sure that if you're looking at a mall REIT, shopping mall REIT, you're also looking, you're comparing it to other shopping mall REITs as well. So it's important to analyze management's ability to grow their portfolio, manage it well. Do they have a plan to improve the value of their properties? And a common strategy used by REITs is to purchase low-end properties and renovate them, upgrade them, attracting higher quality tenants. And if management has a good reputation at this, the market might give them a little bit more of a boost, meaning valuations might be a little bit higher. But it might be worth it because management is so good. See where I talk about when you get into the complexities of different industries and management and strategy, you kind of have to have a sense for these things. Have some experience with them. Okay, so that's just one. That was a very basic overarching overview of REITs and how to analyze them. And that type of analysis goes to every industry. Because every industry has different capital requirements. They need to have big equipment, big overhead. Or they're like a software company where their margins are very high and they don't need a lot of equipment. Okay? So understanding the difference in industries is very important. That's what we're here to help you with. So do you have questions about REITs or other sectors that maybe you're looking at? We want to talk about it with you. Maybe you want to talk about selling your home, downsizing. We're helping a lot of retirees now do this. Figure out what their home is worth, sell it, move to a different area, a lot of times at a lower price level, smaller home, and in a place where they maybe much rather live, maybe closer to the beach, closer to the family, whatever it is, okay? So let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number, and I want to hear from you.
Hey, guys. This is John from Phoenix. Thanks for doing your show every day. I learn a lot from you guys. I just wanted to know where a good place would be to find growth rates. You always talk about growth rates of a company, current growth rates, future growth rates. And I was wondering where we could find that information, and I was listening to somebody talk about PEG ratios the other day. I was wondering if you can elaborate on those too. Fantastic, and have a wonderful day.
Want to know about growth rates, the price to earnings to growth ratio. Those are all good things to look at, especially in the surface level. My favorite site, if you're talking about free and you're looking for growth, is Morningstar. It's a great website to get good basic information on companies. And just type in the symbol, you'll get the quote, and then there's a key ratios tab. Key ratios tab. And it will go back 10 years, and that's one other thing I like it. It's a good layout. It's 10 years. So you see through the economic crisis, through the last recession, how it grew out of it, what was doing before the recession, etc. And it gives you things like revenue, gross margins, dividend, book value per share, cash flow, those type of things. Then it goes into profitability. That's the first part I just described. And then you go down below and there's profitability. It'll tell you the return on equity of the company, return on invested capital, net margins, tax rate, etc. Then there's tabs like growth, and he's looking for growth. And it'll tell you what earnings are doing year over year. For example, I'm just looking at GE as an example. We all know what GE is. And year over year revenue growth last quarter was negative 12.89%. Very quickly, easy to find that. Then it tells you the 3-year average, the 5-year average, the 10-year average. And the 10-year average for revenue for GE is negative 0.25%, so pretty much flat for the last 10 years. And then you can compare that to net income, earnings per share as well. Earnings per share for GE is down 28.5% year over year. And that's a good place for that. Then there's cash flow tabs, financial health, efficiency ratios. It is a very, very good place to find good, solid information, quantitative information on companies for free. Let's go to John in San Francisco. How are you doing, John?
Hello.
How are you doing? What can I do for you?
Yes, yes. Thank you.
No problem.
I would like to know how the Berkshire Hathaway symbol is BRKB.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a good buy at this time?
Well, it's definitely pulled back from a high in the around the 150 range earlier last year, and now it's at 134, pretty much close today, 133.99. So it's had a decent pullback, but I think this is going to get caught in the downtrend of the market. So if you're worried about short term, medium term, I think it'll probably continue to go lower. Now, this is Berkshire Hathaway. It's a very diversified business, but their big part of their business is insurance. And with low rates, insurance companies are having a little bit of trouble. They're also with the purchase of Berkshire Northern or Burlington Northern. Yeah, there we go. they're in the rail space, so transports are getting hurt because of low oil prices and a slowing economy. So parts of their business are definitely hurting, and I think that's what's pushing down the price, and I think that will continue in the near term. What's your time horizon, though, John? Are you looking out 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? What are you thinking?
See, in 2 years' time.
2 years' time, then I think there's a decent amount of risk to it, 2 years' time. I would say above average. But it's still Berkshire. It's still, you know, a great mix of businesses, and Warren's going to allocate capital very well. But I think in the short to medium term, there's risk just like the overall market, and a lot of risk just like the overall market, and that's why I would stay away for it in the short term. But if you have a 10-year time horizon, you'll do great. But 2 years, it's pretty murky. Now, a real estate agent can cost or save you thousands of dollars. There's so much at stake. Take a look at the next InvestTalk Insider info sheet. What makes you different? Why should I listen? Why should I list my home with you? What are the marketing plans for my home? These are important questions. So I have a list of 10 questions you should ask a realtor before you list your home. Okay? So sign up today for free on investtalk.com.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market? Or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's see if you get through and ask your question on the show. We have about 40 minutes left in the show, and it goes by quick, so if you're going to call in, do it sooner rather than later. Now, a common dream for people approaching retirement is to be able to live off their dividend payments, dividends, interests. You know, we have a lot of clients that are retired that are in our balanced income program because they like the income it produces on a very regular basis, and it's, you know, it's a tempting strategy, but if you don't know what you're doing, you're not watching out for certain pitfalls, it can be dangerous. So what we're going to talk about is don't trust your retirement to dividends alone. Okay? Don't just think dividends are the only answer, because there are risks to dividends. Okay? Just like there's risks actually to bonds. And we're going to get into that. And a lot of people fall in love with dividends, but they do have their drawbacks, just like any investment. You know, this is a good example of how every type of investment has pros and it has cons. And if you're not weighing both, you're not looking at the whole picture. Okay, so we're going to weigh both sides of the dividend story. And then I also want to talk about the risks of negative interest rates. I think we're going to, the Fed's going to be going to negative interest rates sometime in the next year or two. And I'm going to talk about whether that's going to work or not and what are the risks. And then I want to get into some economic news that came out today. And finally, value or growth? How do you invest in today's market? Over the next 5 years or so, what area of the market's going to do the best? Value or growth? This is something if you were at our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference, you would know. I'm going to give you a little insight on that today. Now I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, and this is Invest Talk, made possible each weekday by KP Financial, a registered investment advisory firm. We're here for this hour to help answer your money questions at 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through to ask your question live on today's program. Now, let's take a quick review of today's market. We had the Dow off 123 points. The NASDAQ was down 32 points and the S&P down 16. And you had gold up, oil was up slightly. And, you know, this is just a continuation of a bear market. We're in a bear market. I think it's hard to argue against it. Now, Steve would say, or other people might say, oh, we're not down 20% from the high, and that's true. But it has all the markers of a bear market. And, you know, we've rallied back a little bit, but it hasn't really solved the technical problems on the chart. And I think that's the big issue here, is that we're in a deflationary environment with the strong dollar, and earnings are weak because of oil and industrial sector, and exports are not doing so well. You had economic news today out about existing home sales were weak. You have different regions in the manufacturing sector also weak. So this is only probably going to continue. So market was down today, and I think that we're just going to start the next rollover to break the most recent lows pretty soon. Let's go to BJ in Fremont. How you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good. Thanks, Justin, for taking the call.
Thanks for making it.
I have two-part question. One is, as you mentioning that there is a possible downturn, mm-hmm. What you suggest that at this point, what percentage of cash people should in their portfolio be ready with in case something like that happened to take advantage of that? And second thing, your opinion about a stock called Cardo. Mm-hmm. Which is the children's clothing manufacturer, CRI. Yep. Is the symbol.
Okay. Well, let's start with Carter real quick because that'll be pretty simple. I'm not a big fan of it for a couple reasons. One is earnings and revenues are decelerating. I don't like that. You know, a year ago you had revenue up 13%. You had earnings up 29%. Well, this past quarter, revenue was flat and earnings were only up 6%. And as a 22 P ratio. I don't like that. It's too expensive for something that's growth is decelerating, and it's in the retail space. Sure, it's children apparel, but you know, if we go into recession, that's certainly an area that's going to be hit hard. They have a little bit higher debt than I like, so that's something that worries me a little bit. The dividend is pretty safe, I think. Their payout ratio is low, so I don't think the dividend is going anywhere. Let me look at their cash flows. Cash flows are pretty solid, but nothing too exciting. I like the company. I like having it on your watch list. I just think it's too expensive. You know, I wouldn't buy it probably until it gets into the low 70s. Okay. And it's at 101 now. Now, you asked about cash. Yeah. How much cash should somebody hold in their portfolio? And I get this question a lot, and the simplest answer is everyone's a little bit different. And how you be defensive is different between each individual and each different strategy. For example, in our income strategy, we have elevated our cash levels a lot higher than normal. In our dynamic growth strategy, we have elevated cash levels, but we also have short positions. We also have gold positions. We have a lot of anti-cyclical names. Think of consumer staple companies that are doing pretty well this year. So it's really all about what strategy are you employing. You know, we're doing very well in our dynamic growth strategy this year because of those strategies I just talked about. You know, we're up nicely on the year because of that. So it just depends on your expertise and can you deploy strategies like that? Or, you know, do you just keep it simple and cash is your friend and cash is king? You're not going to make any money, but you're not going to lose any money. So it just depends on the strategy to what level of cash makes sense.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
No problem, BJ. Thanks for calling. Now let's quickly get to our main talking point today, and that's about dividends. You know, so many people want to retire. They want to get enough money and retire on dividends, and that's good. It's an admirable strategy or goal. But the problem is that dividends can be cut. That's the biggest problem. They're not guaranteed payments like a bond, right? And if the company gets in trouble, the first thing they're going to cut is the dividend. Just look at the commodity sector right now. There have been a lot of dividend cuts in that area because they're trying to keep their balance sheet together and continue to pay that interest on their debt so they don't default and go bankrupt, right? So dividends are not guaranteed. Number two, if they do cut their dividend, their price of the stock is going to dramatically fall. And you're going to lose not only that income stream, but the principal as well. Okay? So don't get caught up into this dividend. You have to look at other factors. I'm going to get into that and give you two examples of recent companies that have cut their dividends and why they cut their dividends and what you can learn from that so you don't make that same mistake and get caught in that cycle of disappearing dividends. Okay? So you're listening to Invest Talk coming up in the next half hour on Invest Talk Personal, the 10 worst things to buy at Costco or Sam's Club. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. You can call it right now.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. The main talking point on the next edition, you know what to do when the market's like this, don't you? First, you get out your investment policy statement and review it. You do have one, don't you? That's on the next Invest Talk. And did you know that you can talk directly to Steve and Justin if you call our listener line between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific Time, Monday through Friday, 888-99-CHART. Continue with the Monday, February 29th Invest Talk. You can reach Steve or Justin directly with your personal money question anytime. Click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com or check in right now at 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have about 25 minutes left in the show, so if you're going to call in now. I want to talk a little bit about dividends and why dividends aren't sacrosanct. And they can get cut. And I'm going to give you a couple of recent examples of times that they were cut. And the easiest example would be General Electric. Now, before the bear market that really started in October, November of 2007 and ended in March of 2009, GE shares closed at $42 per share in the last quarter of 2007. And it increased its dividend to 31 cents per share per quarter. Now, instead of the company increasing its dividends, the next move was to cut them drastically to 10 cents per share. Per quarter. And the stock moved from $42 a share down to $8.51 when they announced that dividend. So not only did you see your dividend dwindle dramatically, go down by two-thirds, over two-thirds, but the underlying value of your shares went down by about 80%. So your capital disappeared as well as your income. Okay. The next example is Kinder Morgan. And I remember people calling about this a couple years ago when they did this. They did some complex merger deal, and all that really did was lever up their balance sheet. And right at the wrong time. Okay, so despite the fact that Kinder Morgan increased its dividend to 51 cents per share per quarter in October 2015, by December 2015, that dividend was slashed by more than 75% to 12.5 cents per share per quarter. In just a couple months, the first trading day after the dividend hike, Kinder Morgan closed at $29.75. The first day after the dividend cut, just a couple months later, at $16.81 is where the shares closed. So you had a roughly 50% drop in your share value. So once again, income getting cut, underlying value of that particular company or stock getting cut as well. Double whammy. And these are good examples of why dividends, while they're great, and we invest for dividends for many of our strategies, is you can't be just focused on the dividend. It's one part of the picture. Okay, just like investing in junk bonds, high yield bonds. Everyone's focused on the yield. It's only one part of the picture. People want to invest in REITs. They're focused on the yield. Only one part of the picture. Okay, you're getting the gist of this? You can't look at dividends in a vacuum because there is more to consider. And in the cases of GE and Kinder Morgan, there are two factors that every investor should have weighed and considered. One is debt. Both companies have a lot of debt or had a lot of debt at the time. And during an economic downturn, they ran into financial trouble. Because their businesses were cyclical. You know, GE had GE Capital, which was a big driver of why they had problems and why they had debt. But they also had an industrial side, which was steadier than the banking side, but it still had its issues. Okay? So, understanding the cyclicality of the business, Kinder Morgan, obviously oil prices went down, oil prices are cyclical, commodity prices are cyclical. That is why Kinder Morgan fell on hard times. So it's debt and cyclicality of the business. And that's why when you're looking at dividends for any company, you have to look at their entire business, not just one aspect. And that goes with earnings, that goes with profitability, that goes with the balance sheet. It's all taken in aggregate together. So don't fall in love with dividends in of themselves. They are great for the most part, but they still have their risk. And that's why you either need to do a lot of research or have a professional like us do it for you. Now, Invest Talk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can still ask us on the next Invest Talk. We're always here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is John. I'm calling from Walnut Creek. I have an investment strategy question for my IRA. If someone were to invest in a Vanguard dividend growth index fund, say put $10,000 in that, and this fund would yield about 2.2% over about a 10-year period, how would that investment turn out, say, compared to someone who puts $10,000 split equally in the 10 holdings within that index fund? For example, Microsoft, J&J, Coke, Procter & Gamble, Walmart, Pepsi, etc. Now, each one of those also pays a dividend, and it could range from 2 to 3%. Would you necessarily be getting more dividends that you can reinvest versus, say, the index fund that just pays the 2.2%? And I'm just curious as to which one of those scenarios would work out better long-term. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right, that's a great question. So what he's looking at is he's looking at a mutual fund or an ETF. I'm not sure which one he's looking at. But he's looking at some sort of fund. And you can look at, it's published, you can look at the top holdings of those of that particular fund. And he's saying, well, why don't, instead of buying the fund, why don't I just go buy the individual names, right? Because the fund obviously has an expense ratio. For example, I think he said the Vanguard Dividend Growth Fund, that's a 32 basis point expense ratio. Now, surely you could do it on your own and avoid that expense ratio. But one thing you have to remember is that there's also commissions when you're buying those stocks. Okay? So paying that those commissions can add up. If you're only doing 10, you know, you got to do the you know, $7 a trade, you're talking $70 divided by 10,000 dollars, trying to do the math quickly, that would be it would be about 0.7%. So right there, those expenses are higher than any, but obviously you hold them for multiple years, they work it off, and it can be better. That's one thing to think about. And that's why we always say, if you have less than $100,000, it's usually best to just go no load, no transaction fee mutual funds, avoid those commissions. When you start getting over $100,000, it starts to make more sense to buy individual stocks and bonds. Okay, so there's that. And then you're looking at 10 companies. Well, the fund or that index is made up of a lot more than just 10 companies. It's made up of 50 plus, probably. I don't know exactly, but a lot. So the will it mimic it to an extent because you're buying the top holding? Sure, but it's not going to be exactly right. And then also, are you going to have the right diversification with only 10? You know, maybe you're overweight certain areas that you shouldn't be. Maybe you're underweight other areas that you want to be. Okay. So I don't really like that strategy. I think if you're going to employ that strategy, I think mutual funds and ETFs, they encompass those strategies very well. So to break them up into individual names, I'm not a big fan of that unless you have a ton of money to really spread out those commission costs and really diversify over 30 plus names, etc. So I would just buy the actual mutual fund, as long as it's a good one, and you know, Vanguard has that, the one you spoke of is pretty good. So try not to overthink it is really what I'm saying. But I like that he is thinking about it to some degree. Now, one of the services we provide for a limited number of our listeners is a free portfolio checkup. Steve will be in San Diego County on March 2nd to meet with clients and listeners, and he'll also be in San Ramon, California on March 9th. The latest dates are always posted on investtalk.com, so if you don't hear them being talked about on air, just go to investtalk.com and you'll be able to see them right there and send us a message, and you know, we'll get you scheduled. It's a first-come, first-serve kind of thing, so to save your time for that day, just go to investtalk.com, click on schedule a meeting.
Have you given up on American manufacturing? Actually, U.S. companies are manufacturing more today. GE created 10,000 new jobs, with many more expected as they build new plants. See the whole story in an InvestTalk recorded webinar called New America. You can watch it anytime when you're an InvestTalk insider. Sign up for free on investtalk.com.
8992-4278. We have about 15 minutes left in the show, so give us a call now if you have a question. Thinking about calling, all right? Now, I want to talk about something that we discussed at our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference two weekends ago. Not this last week, the weekend before. And it's about where to position yourself in the market and this strategy that will work going forward. Now, ever since the financial crisis, beginning end of the last bear market, growth stocks have done the best for a couple reasons. Well, one is the Fed is printing money. They were throwing money at the system, inflating asset prices. People are think the Fed always has their back. And so they're putting money into the riskiest area of the market, and that is growth. Okay. Not only that, but growth was hard to come by over the past 5 or 6 years. because of a slow economic environment. So growth came very attractive. And what I'm talking about here is growth investing versus value investing. And most people are growth investors. And why is that? Well, because growth investing is exciting. Growth, when you're talking about growth investing, you're talking about companies like Google and Netflix and Tesla and Amazon. Exciting names. Ones that are maybe on the cutting edge of technology, innovation. And that's what CNBC talks about and Bloomberg talks about, because they get the most listeners and viewership from that. Well, guess what? Value investing isn't exciting. It's harder. You can't just say, oh, what are the big exciting names out there? You actually have to do research, filter the market, find names that are cheap compared to their revenue, earnings, EBITDA. It's a little bit harder. But over the past 50 years, it's been abundantly clear that value investing works better over time. Now, there's been 6 instances where growth did better than value for an extended period of time. Now, one was from 1960 to 1964, so I don't want to go through them all, but there's been 6 times, okay? Now, recently, the S&P performance has been driven up by a small number of companies. In fact, the 2 best performers in 2015 were Amazon and Netflix, both up over 100%. Amazon's PE is 900. Netflix's PE is 300. So it's no surprise that a value-oriented strategy would miss those type of gains. And you have other factors, like the first time since the 90s that over 80% of the IPOs were losing money. Basically, people have been blinded by the excitement and the tech bubble. And what I'm here to tell you is that time is over. And I have tons of charts and things that I could show you. And I'll get to that a little bit later maybe. But basically, the time has turned. It's now really a stock picker's market. And it's really about picking value names. And you need to have that skill going forward over the next 5 years or so, if you're going to outperform. Let's go to Manu in Fremont. How are you doing, Manu?
Hey, listen, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
I have a very complicated question, but it may be easier. Okay. There is a term in your account that is called SMA, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Separately managed accounts.
No, it is based on your trading. That's
simple,
what they called SMA value.
That could be simple moving average.
Yeah, it's not simple moving average. It's basically why I'm calling. I have account with E-Trade,
mm-hmm.
and I'm short. My account has gone up more than 100,000 in 2 days. And my buying power is not gone up by even a dollar. I called them. They said, your buying power depend on SMA. SMA is actually number. It goes up or down if you buy or sell.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, if my account is gone that much up, my buying power is not. Then they say it's a 2-time SMA. Because in the last 2-3 days, you have not done any trading. So SMA, based on SMA, you are buying power won't go up.
This is called a special memorandum account. It could be something, it probably do a settlement. It has to do a settlement of your securities. So 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. Now, we have Manu on the line, and he's asking about an SMA, which is a special memorandum account. And to sum it up for you, basically, Manu, is, you know, it's complicated, and it just has to do with settlement of your cash versus the margin availability. It's very complex and very specific. And I would just say, whatever your broker tells you your SMA is, then that's what it is. I mean, these things are highly regulated. I know they can be complex, but I doubt they're wrong. Just say that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay. I don't understand, but at least if my account goes up, I should have more buying power.
You should, but it could have something to do with settled cash. Did you sell anything recently in the past 3 days?
No, nothing.
Nothing. Did you short anything?
No, I didn't even trade for last week. So that's what I'm saying. Then actually, I had this short position. So when the short account goes up, let's say short stock goes up, then my margin buying power goes down.
Yes.
But for last 2-3 days, the short security is going down and my account value is going up. Now they say you have not done any trading, so your SMA is the same, so your buying power will not change. But they have two things. One is SMA.
Maybe they don't count shorts. I don't know. To be frank, we never deal with this. You know, we never use margin. I don't say we never use margin. We rarely use margin with our clients, and so we're never even close to using our SMA.
I'm not saying margin.
I understand.
If you have
but,
to short, you have to have a margin.
Yeah. Listen, Manu, this is very specific. I don't have an explanation for you. I would have to look at this in a very specific manner. And what I would just say is, if whatever they say your margin, your SMA amount is, that's what it is. This is, like I said, it's a highly regulated area. You're dealing with, who are you with? TD Ameritrade?
Yes, it's E-Trade. Actually, E-Trade.
I mean, they're very. I mean, it's one of the biggest ones out there. So they're not wrong. I would probably say 99% they're not wrong. I don't know why things are different, but I would just take their word for it. Thanks, Manu. Now it's time for Invest Talk Personal, about the day-to-day money choices you make that can have a lasting impact. We're always trying to save you money. You know, personal finance, or finance in general, is really more than just about investing. It's about saving, and it's also about spending money wisely. So we're going to talk about the worst things to buy at Costco or Sam's Club, and this list is compiled by the folks at Kiplinger.com, and you can see the link to the complete list on investtalk.com. Now, we're assuming the club price is the best price on every item, but that's not always true. One, books and DVDs, not always the best deal. This is where I go back to Amazon. They probably have the best there. Canned goods, you can score better deals when they're on sale at the supermarket. Clothing and shoes, the reason they're priced lower? Because even the designer brands, they're often lower quality, use cheaper fabric. It's not the high-end version of that brand. You know, it's kind of like the outlet version. I don't know if you know this, but outlet stores, they don't really usually have the top end of whatever brand they're selling. They make a lot of the products they sell at those outlet stores simply for those particular retail channels. Okay. Then condiments, supersize are great for big parties, but the shelf life is so short, usually you don't finish it all by the time, so you waste a lot of it. Cooking oils, same issues. They go bad quicker than you realize. And one last one, electronics. Electronics sold at warehouse clubs tend to be bundled with accessories, have different features, so you might not get the same thing that you would get elsewhere, but you'll find something similar for 10 to 15% less. Okay? There's more on that. Now, time is up. A reminder that you have a question you'd like to ask me directly, send me a note. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisory firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.